Now, please. All right, I see people coming in, but we are past 9:30, so I'm going to go ahead and get started. So the time is 9:33 a.m. on Monday, or no, not Monday. Sorry, it's Friday, May 30th, 2025, and I call the meeting of the Committee on Behavior Analysts to order. This meeting is hosted via Zoom. The public and parties on the agenda have been properly noticed of the fact and have been supplied with meeting access instructions. Ms. Malice, would you kindly call the roll?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. Dr. Byra,
Present.
Dr. Davy, he waved. Okay.
Okay,
I'm
very good.
present. Sorry, the mute button was like in the corner and then it took my whole screen away. So I'm here, present. Thank you. Ms. Denton,
Present.
Dr. Stenhoff,
Present.
and Dr. Rates is absent, and we do have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Malice. As a reminder to board staff, we want to make sure that we have activated the transcript recording feature of the meeting for the purpose of drafting the meeting minutes. All righty. So good morning. Thank you, those of my fellow committee members who were able to make it today, and board staff for getting everything organized, especially with a holiday weekend. I know everyone's probably feeling the extra kind of crunch and strain of being out of the office on Monday. So thank you all of you who have helped get this meeting together. And thank you, those who are in the audience, if you're waiting for your application to be reviewed, or you're just here for the benefit of continuing education credits. Which brings us to our next item. The Board of Psychological Examiners is approved by the BACB as an ACE continuing education provider. Attending a meeting of the Board's Committee on Behavior Analysts is eligible for continuing education credit for maintenance of BACB certification and for Arizona licensure renewal. To claim this credit, make note of the code word provided hourly throughout the meeting. To report the code word to board staff for purposes of earning continuing education credit, look for the link on the board meeting page for this particular meeting. All right, we'll move on to agenda item number 4, which is the approval of minutes from April 25th, 2025, regular session notes. Would anyone like to offer a motion for approving the, or actually, just a motion in general for the 2025, April 25th, 2025 draft minutes?
Madam Chair, I just need to note that I was absent from that meeting and will be recused from this.
All right.
So moved.
All right, motion's been made. Is there a second?
I will second.
Thank you, Ms. Denton. All right, the motion's been made by Dr. Stenhoff. It has been seconded by Ms. Denton. Is there any discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, motion carries. All right, we will move on to item number 5, which is the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation to the board regarding complaint number 25-31 against Spencer Freeman. This is for, before we discuss the agenda item, I do have an important information to announce. Please note that a person or representative of a person who has filed or is subject of a complaint and is present today may make a brief statement for up to 5 minutes. The committee, by the committee, sorry, goodness, it's Friday, folks. We're on the struggle bus. To the committee when prompted by me. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or respondent after their statement. Only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, it will make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance today, please ensure that your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, respondent, and their legal representative may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that individuals in attendance who speak out without committee approval will be warned twice by the chair not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from Zoom and they will not be permitted to re-enter the meeting. Please only use initials for patients or children and the complainant. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon parties present and requests to speak. Oh, actually, we're not going to go into executive session today. Never mind. Before we get on to this item, are there any recusals or disclosures for agenda item number 5? All right, seeing none. So this case was initially reviewed and discussed by the committee during the April 25th, 2025 meeting. Due to new information revealed during the interview, Sorry, during the review, the committee voted to table the matter to allow for receipt of additional materials. Today, we will continue to review this case. Dr. Stenhoff, you're the lead, so will you please supply a summary for the committee?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. As you stated, Mr. Friedman has been we tabled this complaint due to some information that arose during our last hearing on this. A couple of items to know is Mr. Freeman's been a BCBA since 2020, licensed in the state of Texas. He reportedly is not practicing in Arizona and doesn't plan to in the future. Based on the information we have, just going back to the telehealth issues, the statutes were based on the board had its had a motion to investigate evidence that appears to show that a behavior analyst is incompetent, a behavior analyst guilty of unprofessional conduct. According to the telehealth in 36-3608A9, there needs to be annual updates to the healthcare provider's registration for accuracy and submit that the applicable healthcare provider regulatory board or agency to report the number of patients. And then the licensee shall inform the board of writing the licensee's current residence, address, office, and so on within 30 days of the change of information. During our course of discussion, Mr. Freeman did affirm that that was in fact the case, but also with the discussion too is that Mr. Freeman, according to his report, was practicing as a BCBA in Arizona without a license, and so as a result, we decided to table this. We requested information to this effect. Mr. Freeman did provide information that he was, in fact, practicing in the state of Arizona. However, he was also under the supervision of a licensed BCBA in the state of Ms. Davis. And according to the information, there was a showing his work during certain time periods and the overlapping supervision with Ms. Davis. Also to be noted as well is during his email exchanges with the board staff, Mr. Freeman expressed intent to relinquish his telehealth registration. And then the board staff informed that we need to discuss as a committee. So anyway, here, that's where we stand today as far as the records and the information they provide regarding practicing without a license. That ends my summary, but I'll take questions if there are any.
Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff. Does anyone have any questions for Dr. Stenhoff at this time? All right, thank you. Okay, there's no complaint for this case as the investigation was opened by the board. I see that Mr. Freeman is present. You're allowed to, please unmute your microphone and introduce yourself for the record. You're also welcome to make a brief statement to committee up to 5 minutes at this time.
Hi there, good morning to the board. I have no major statement to make. I just want to thank everyone for all their assistance in helping me navigate this and just reiterate my apology that I said last time about my failure to correspond on this matter and this the actual failure to update the registry information.
Thank you. Is anyone joining you today as a representative from your agency?
No, it's just me.
Okay, thank you. All right, at this time, I will open up questions to my fellow committee members. Before I get to my other committee members, I did just want to because since we have so many folks on the call here, many of you who are going to be brand new to be licensed in our state or very soon, and hopefully you can relate to your colleagues. I just wanted to, before we get into questions, just one of the notes that you put on in the files you received that when you made note of providing services in Arizona without a license, you said, because I was instructed by the management of my company. And I just want that to be kind of a warning to everyone as you're coming to our state that it's your license. You're the BCBA who's practicing here. I don't think most companies have ill intentions when they're giving out advice, but they unfortunately are not always well informed about regulations in our state, especially if they are operating in other states. So please do your due diligence and protect yourself. Be very, very clear on what the regulations are for practice here or any other licensure state, not just Arizona, before you practice there, and don't rely on your company to know all of those answers and be informed. Dr. Senoff, I see your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Freeman, we discussed this last time, and to Madam Chair's points, we covered all those, but I appreciate the reminder, and I also am glad that the other callers on this in this meeting are being appraised of what's going on. To move on to the next piece that we tabled this for, was the piece of practicing without a license in the state. And I just want to reiterate that if you are practicing in the state, whether your residence or your location is outside of the state of Arizona, in order to work with clients, you have to be licensed in the state of Arizona. So I want to reiterate that to the audience. But and Mr. Freeman, I think through the course of all this, you've become acutely aware of that issue, and that need. I really right now I only have one question. So you provided information regarding you being supervised by a licensed BCBA in the state, Ms. Davis. And the records that you provide, are those, I'm going to ask this, and it's almost rhetorical, but not quite. Are those records accurate that you were in fact provided that amount of supervision according to your hours that you report on that spreadsheet?
Yes, I mean, the only caveat I would say is that I didn't pull those numbers directly, but my understanding is that was pulled directly from Central Reach, which we use for scheduling. So those are like a hard representation of the actual appointments that were rendered.
Okay. And as I understand it, you are no longer working for that company, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so you don't have direct access to those hours or anything. So it was provided. And where did you obtain those records from? Who provided them to you to be provided to the board?
Tracy Davis, the
Okay,
licensed.
great. Okay. All right. That is the information I need. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Right. Ms. Denton, I see your hand raised. Go ahead.
Thank you. Lowering my hand. I'm getting better at this. Okay, Mr. Spencer. So I'm going to, this is a continuing education event and like it's an ethics CEU. So I'm going to kind of go in a little bit of a narrative before I ask my question. Right. So whenever we look at our telehealth registration, and we are discussing, what binds our telehealth registries? Is that a word? When we look at those who are registered under this, they are bound by ARS 36-3606, right? And under this, there are sections of this that talks about a healthcare provider who is not licensed to provide healthcare services in this state, which is Arizona, but holds an active license to provide healthcare services in another jurisdiction and who provides telehealth services to a person located in this state is not subject to the registration requirements of this section if either of the following apply. And one of those pieces is if you are in consultation with a healthcare provider who is licensed in this state who has the ultimate authority over the patient's diagnosis and treatment. Okay, that's my narrative here. So I did see the documents that you supplied from Tracy Davis, that says how often she met with you. Can you confirm who was in charge, who had the ultimate authority over the patient's treatment?
It was her. We collaborated in that effort. It was Tracy Davis. So when we had those supervision meetings, that was the only patient that I was seeing. I had patients as well in Colorado that I was working with a different clinical director under. So all of our conversations were exclusive to that patient, and she was, boots on the ground, for lack of a better term, for support I needed with the staff, any situation with the family. But she was ultimately overseeing that case.
Okay. And you just kind of said this, and I want to confirm this. The families in Arizona that you were serving, I think it was five cases ultimately, like you did four assessments and then you had one ongoing case. These families knew that Tracy Davis was the licensed behavior analyst who had the ultimate authority over this case.
Yes, she was with me in person for all of the initial assessments, and we made that kind of determination to the family. We let them know what the situation was with like where I lived and what I was doing and how I was helping, and that was going to be in a temporary capacity until someone else was going to come in to take over, but that she was going to be a constant throughout that transition process.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Denton. Mr. Freeman, looking at the documentation, I see the supervision. And forgive me, other committee members, if I missed it, but I didn't see a contract. Was there a contract between you and Ms. Davis about her providing a certain amount of supervision or touch points while you were doing work in Arizona?
I don't think we had a formal contract. Like, I'm more familiar with, like, if someone's getting their field work under me, like that type of contract is what I'm kind of hearing. I don't think we had that outside of just an employment contract, I would say. They
Okay.
did specify that outside of the other information on the training success plan document that I shared. That would be the only other thing I could point to.
Okay. Thank you. Other committee members. Okay. I know we tabled this to kind of talk about your practice, but I don't also want to forget about the original issue. And so I would like to know, have you submitted the updated, registry of what you were supposed to have submitted to board staff?
This was in my email correspondence, but I did obtain access to the portal. And again, I want to thank the board staff for their help in getting me to resolve that. I wasn't able to submit all the information through the Google form because of the information that was required, like the license, the insurance information, and like I forget what the term is, but you need like an Arizona representative. And so I was asking like who that would be since I didn't have any of that information because I'm not with the company anymore. I wasn't able to actually submit that form. And
Okay.
that's when I'd ask, is there any way I can just kind of revoke my license here so that I'm not causing an administrative burden or failure to update or anything like that?
Okay. Brian, it looks like you are formulating
No,
a
just
thought.
I
Yep.
mean it makes sense that they wouldn't be able to do that given how the portal operates. And I think we've got the supervision records of like what's going on, which I don't know if we can take that as like as the documentation of practice that's happening for our administrative records. I would let board staff chime in on that. I was just thinking of what we actually have in front of us and how we might leverage that to fit the requirements.
So,
Hi,
I'm
Mr.
sorry,
Freeman.
I can't find my hand raised thing, but if I may just real quick to clarify for people who weren't here for last time, since I obtained the telehealth registry, I did not provide any services in Arizona. So the update that I would be providing is that I did not serve any clients after that time. The other issue that we had talked about was before I had received that telehealth accreditation.
Okay. Well, then there's nothing to fill out, and therefore it seems like we can move forward.
Okay. Further questions for Mr. Freeman at this time? Ms. Pakanan.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I needed to formulate my thoughts. What I'm hearing the respondent, Mr. Freeman, say is that had he been able to submit an update, then the update would have consisted of, I no longer have a statutory agent. I no longer have, whatever the requirements are that he needs to update. This is what I no longer have. So the committee may determine, this is your discretion, that based on what Mr. Freeman has supplied to you, to the file in terms of, the email, the explanation that he no longer has access to records. He hasn't provided any services into Arizona. You may find that satisfactory in terms of constituting an annual update. The fact remains, he didn't update in accordance with the deadline. The statute has a specific deadline of 1 year, but you may deliberate whether or not what he has stated to you amounts to an update. Simply, I don't have these materials anymore. And that may be satisfactory to eventually recommend to the board that the authorization, the telehealth authorization, be terminated. But that would be the last step of your deliberation is to consider that matter. You have other matters, of course, to first determine. Does that make sense?
Committee members, do you have questions for Ms. Pakinon? Nope. All right. If there's no other questions for Mr. Freeman, then I suggest that we move into discussion. Or if there's no discussion and someone wants to propose a motion, I'm down with that too. Ms. Den.
I'll start discussion. So I do want to just echo, I had it down in my notes as well, but I saved it for discussion and you beat me to the punch, Dr. Byra. Whenever we do look at the members of the public who are here, licensees, people who are already licensed, people who are accruing or applying for their license and attempting to practice in the state of Arizona, I do love, like I absolutely adore that companies are assisting these BCBAs with making this licensure process more simple, right? But at the same time, that does not mean that the company owns that telehealth registration, owns that license, is responsible for the behavior of the individual who holds that. So, you know, when we look at this, I do have some concerns about the documents that Mr. Freeman signed as part of this telehealth registration, whenever it comes to, I have read the Arizona Administrative Code. I have read the Arizona Revised Rules and Statutes. I will abide by them. And I want to ensure that, well, I'm taking that into consideration. You know, whenever you have that information, you know, regardless of who helped you get your telehealth registration, abiding by Arizona requirements and statutes and rules and all of these pieces remains the responsibility of the individual who holds the registration or the license. So that's one piece here. I think the other piece is, as we discussed this, I'm a little hesitant, with the documentation that was provided. To know who held the ultimate responsibility for the cases. You know, whenever we look at other individuals who we have, who have come before this committee in the past, and we talk about who was supervising you, do you have meeting notes? Do you have a supervision contract? Do you have, you know, are there details in here? You know, when I look through the documentation that was provided by Mr. Freeman, you know, I don't see necessarily client-specific information. You know, we do talk about your supervisor who, you know, oversaw your implementation of behavioral skills training or oversaw your implementation of a parent meeting. But what I would like to see, and maybe it's just an itch that I need scratched, what I would like to see is the licensee reporting on the fact that they did hold the ultimate responsibility so I can remove the concern of practicing without a license. That's my discussion. I'd love to hear from other committee members on this. That's kind of what I wanted to chat about.
Ms. Denton, I hear your concern. I think the one piece of documentation that kind of went over like the trainings and things, I was, you know, not really taking that as much in consideration as that Excel document with the frequent checkpoints and the file reviews of which clients they were. And I guess like the time, I think we're looking at for the month of June, it was 1,063 minutes for the month. It's not part of like the one PDF, Ms. Denton. If you look in our Google Drive, it's like a separate Excel document. I'm not sure if you saw that. It took me a minute to find it because it wasn't roped in with the other
and you have to
notes.
And you have to scroll all the way to column O to show.
You're on mute.
I will fully admit I did not see that. So
yeah, I didn't see that at first. Yeah, I didn't see that at first either. So I will say that The other plan that's kind of embedded within that PDF, it kind of was more kind of general, kind of oversight. But looking through June and July, there was considerable amount of oversight with Ms. Davis in terms of
Yeah.
science.
Madam Chair, I would just say the same thing. I think that the supervision activities that are reported between Ms. Davis and Mr. Freeman, particularly in column N and O, with the note of the clients and the amount of time that were spent in that area, like that pretty much, I think, answers my questions with regard to whether or not supervision was occurring. You've got a licensed behavior analyst pulling this out of their EHR, sending it over to us. And to the best of Mr. Freeman's knowledge, these numbers are accurate. To me, that answers that question. And as much as I'm just going to take this moment as part of our deliberation to say I'm not a fan of the telehealth registry. As much as Ms. Denwe read through the rules around it, it was instituted with a lot of haste, in my opinion, and it has led to continued administrative headaches for our team as individuals that were, seeking a way to be able to kind of help Arizona through the telehealth credential have not kept up on what actually occurs there. And not that that's an excuse, but this is a bigger problem for us that we probably need to agendize with regard to that telehealth piece, to be able to assist those that by no by you know were not coming in to for any nefarious reasons, they were coming in to provide much needed service and access to care, and then are caught up in some of the administrative pieces that they may or may not have been attending to. That's 12 months out, or were doing this in a hurry and checked all the boxes and failed to read it. And I think there's lots of people that do not read the terms of agreement every time it's updated by Apple or every time it's updated by Netflix. And I think that this is something where we probably need to do some education, that it is critical that they review this information and attend to their 1 hour or what to their once a year report. With that, I didn't get to, I wasn't privy to the conversation last time, so I had to read through the report that was put forward by Ms. Michelson. But I really just don't see anything here that rises to a statute or rules violation on behalf of this individual. And I think I would make the motion to go ahead and dismiss this case.
Ms. Denton, I see your hand up.
I do see the spreadsheet now, and my concerns related to was there appropriate oversight from a licensed behavior analyst and who it was are entirely remediated.
Yep, it was hidden little gem there. Dr. Stenhoff?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'd like to second. Sorry,
Oops.
cut off. Dr. Davies' motion. Second.
Okay. Alrighty. So there's been a motion made by Dr. Davey to dismiss the complaint. There's been a second by Dr. Stenhoff. Is there any further discussion? I have a question for for board staff. If we like group them both like under one, like I know there's the issue of failure to report for the registry update, and then there's the we were concerned that there was, practice out being, properly supervised as like a second component. Do we handle those separately? Do we do it as a lump sum?
Madam Chair, because the new allegation, which potentially practicing in Arizona without a license, it was rolled into the existing complaint. Dismissing the complaint dismisses all of the allegations associated with it. So you can take care of it just in one motion. So, I don't know if the committee is, this is, of course, is a recommendation to go to the board. I don't know if the committee has contemplated non-disciplinary action as well, or if it is I guess the vote will tell us whether the will of the committee is to recommend an outright dismissal. I just wanted to mention that.
And
Okay.
Ms. Packinen, the paperwork we would need, we still need a report though, right? We would still need, like, one of the caveats to this being dismissed would be that the document, like a letter is sent from Mr. Freeman saying that during this time frame he provided no service, but whatever would satisfy our reporting requirement, correct? I mean,
Madam Chair, Dr. Davey, if you want that to be more effectively articulated as you just did from Mr. Freeman, that could be your recommendation, or that could be part of the recommendation. It could be teased out of the existing documentation in the file, but if you prefer it be more clearly articulated, then please include that in your motion.
Yeah, I think I would include, I would amend my motion that the dismissal is contingent upon Mr. Freeman providing that report to board staff so that we have it for our records.
And
Okay.
Madam Chair, one more piece to the fact remains that he has an active telehealth authorization today. So I think there needs to be, a recommendation relative to if after meeting all that you direct him to, then the recommendation to the board would include at the very end execution of an agreement to relinquish the authorization, then he is relieved and freed up from future reporting requirements, which I think his next report would be due in September. So all of that can be done in time, but that would be the very last step of this process.
All right, so maybe what I'll do is, if it pleases the chair, I'll withdraw my motion and reform my motion.
Okay, before we start another motion, I mean, yes,
Sure.
but I did see Ms. Denton's hand up. So before we recalibrate anything,
I
Ms. Denton, did you have something else to add?
lowered my hand because Ms. Pekkanen addressed it.
Okay.
I was going to ask if we were also going to address the registrant's request to relinquish his license, if that was all going to be bundled up in this, and what exactly we were going to do about that. But Ms. Pekkanen did it. I lowered my hand.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. All right, Dr. Davey, with a revision.
Yes. So I withdrew my motion. Does Dr. Stenhoff have to agree to that? I think he does. For Robert's rules.
I
Yeah.
second Dr.
You
Davies'
have to remove your second.
correction.
Yeah, remove
Yeah.
your second. All right. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I move that we dismiss the complaint as there's not evidence that there's any activity that rises to a statute of rules violation. As part of the agreement for this dismissal, we're going to require that Mr. Freeman provide us a report to board staff that would be to date, so through the date that he sends this to us. So if he produces it today, it would be all of his activities from the time he was issued that license through May 30th. That would serve as his final report to the to board administration to satisfy the requirements of his telehealth registry license. Following receipt of that, we would
Dr.
then.
Davey, sorry. Are you wanting it to be final report today, or should it be his final report is in September?
I just use it as an example. Like, I would like the reports. If he's done, the report can come whenever to Ms. Pack.
Okay.
So whatever day he sends that report needs to be up to date as of this is the date that I'm
Okay.
seeing it, and therefore this is the time period it's covering. Because on the last part of that motion would be on the date that that report is received and satisfies the requirements that we would then move to terminate his license as a telehealth provider. Ms. Pekkanen, did I get all three pieces for you?
Ms. Denton.
Would it be a committee and board termination of his registration, or would we honor his request to relinquish?
Madam Chair, Ms. Denton, the board has in the past agreed to, with concurrence, with their concurrence, execute a document for relinquishment of a telehealth authorization. So I think we've done four maybe previously. So it's just a simple document that memorializes that the authorization terminates as a as of a certain date, a particular date. It is non-disciplinary, so not reported to the National Data Bank. And then, of course, that's retained in our files. If we would ever need to verify that someone held this authorization from, a specific date to a conclusion date.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Pekkanen.
All right.
I'll
Do we have a
second
second?
Dr. Davies.
Okay,
Yeah,
so
type of
Dr.
not
Davy
producers.
has made the motion. It's been seconded by Dr. Davy. Any further discussion?
My further discussion is just at the end, I would like to add the telehealth registry to a future agenda item for discussion with board staff.
Noted. All right. All in favor then?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oh, sorry. We voted Ms. Tackenon. Do we need to? Oh, okay. Okay.
After.
Any opposed? All right. So the motion carries. So complaint number 25-31 regarding Spencer Freeman has been what Dr. Davey proposed. We're gonna go with that.
Recommendation to the board for dismissal, an updated report, and termination of the license once the report is received. Good
That's
luck.
right, like Dr. Davey said. Thank you, Dr. Davey. Ms. Pakanan.
Oh, I did everyone vote?
Yes, everyone voted.
Okay,
I think
great.
so.
Thank you. So lots of thoughts that I have here. First of all, Dr. Davies' recommendation that we agendize this topic. What I'd love to arrange, if I can, is that there is a point of contact in the Access Agency who works for Access. She is a physician, and that is the person to whom I report on a monthly basis how many applications we've received and how many authorizations have been granted. And she met with executive directors of boards who issue telehealth registry authorizations. It's been maybe a month ago that we met with her, and we had a discussion about all of the pain points around this particular practice authorization. What I'd like to do, if she's agreeable, is invite her to this discussion so that she can hear. I mean, I've articulated, I think, the things that I've observed, but with every month, there are more issues that we unveil and experience. So that's what I am recommending that I attempt to arrange, is so that the discussion that we have is heard by someone who may have some influence in terms of what the future of the telehealth registry may look like. So that was my first point. And so patience with me while I reach out and see if that can be arranged, please. But then the other issue is, now that the committee has experienced, a number of instances where telehealth registry authorization holders had to come before the committee and answer to a lot of questions, and board staff, we see applications from time to time that look suspiciously like someone else prepared them and submitted them on behalf of the person named in the application. Does the committee want every telehealth registry applicant to be advised that they need to submit to an application interview with the committee for the committee to work through these issues? I will say that this, if you look at the recent agendas, this is not a popular practice authorization because I think it has its limitations. It isn't a green light to practice all you want in any way that you want into Arizona. It has its limitations and its restrictions. And so what I'm suggesting or offering to the committee is, staff just taking that extra step and advising every applicant for this authorization, you need to submit to an interview with the committee.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Ms. Pakkinen, I think that that's that is a pretty brilliant approach to this, to making sure that someone understands what they're adhering to and what they're signing up for. I guess one of my questions that would be, and again, I don't want to veer too off since this is not fully item or agendized, is I'd love the data on how many BCBAs, LBAs do we have currently enrolled? What has enrollment looked like since kind of the winding down of the pandemic, like at the height of this? Like, how many individuals are out there technically operating under this? And what's our communication with them? LBAs, BCBAs are transient. Like, they switch jobs. There's a lot of opportunities out there for them to switch jobs. be interesting to also look at what email address is supplied. So if it's their work email address and we're sending reminders, those may be going nowhere. And so I think we probably have some a little bit of homework to do in the database, maybe to take a look at what we have. And maybe there's some of us that can work with board staff to kind of dissect this and maybe come forward with some recommendations on how we move forward. And then like, what's the violation rate, right? It seems like we've got a couple of these come through. You know, are we looking at 5% of the people not doing it? Are we looking at, you know, 20% of them that have failed? Are we seeing a lot of these like generated reports that are coming from an agency versus an individual? It would be interesting to kind of dig in and see where we're at so we could make some recommendations about this. I, for one, would be fine putting these app the new applicants on here. I just don't think we probably don't have very many new applicants, right, Ms. Packman? I think it's like
No, Madam Chair, Dr. Davey, I just pulled up the report that I sent to the contacted at Access. Her name is Dr. Morenz, Dr. Anna Morenz. Forgive me while I looked for that. The April report, we had at that time 13 applications received and only 8 granted, meaning that there are 5 applications that are open. And my hunch is at least some of them are abandoned applications because of the realization that, again, this authorization isn't opening the door to, you know, any and all types of practice into Arizona. I think once those restrictions and limitations are discovered in the application process, some applicants simply don't finish their file. So we have 8 granted at this time. Presumably, one relinquishment could be imminent. So the numbers are quite small. But we can also do a deep dive into the things that you're suggesting, and we can also take a look at the report that the summary of all of the annual reports that are submitted. We use a Google form, and so all of that data gets dumped into a sheet, and that would be available for the committee to analyze to ascertain, you know, what are we taking away from this authorization? Spoiler alert, there are several of these 8 behavior analysts who on their annual report represented no clients contact, you know, no instances of any service delivery. So again, I think it's a reflection of really how restricted this authorization is. So staff will pull all of this together and you can have a really robust discussion around it.
But to your point of like no report, nothing to report, right? Then we have this administrative burden that every year they remember to send that, right? And there is going to be a year where they don't. It's like you don't use something, it's not top of mind. You change companies, it's not in your calendar anymore. You know, as much as someone who wants to be organized, it just seems like we're setting them up for failure that a year from now we're gonna have to talk to somebody else about something very similar to this. So I welcome the discussion with Dr. Murano and Access. I think pulling that data together maybe early, like early, so we can kind of have some discussions and maybe formulate some of our thoughts for that conversation with her would be helpful. So we're not just kind of flat-footed reacting to something. So maybe it's a two-part agenda item. It's review what you have for us, Ms. Pakkinen, let us have a conversation as the committee, and then invite her to the next meeting, maybe where we can have a sit-down.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you to all who participated in this agenda item today. The parties will be notified by board staff in the near future regarding next steps, so please contact them if you have any questions regarding the committee's decision today. So, Mr. Freeman, they'll reach out to you directly. Okay. All right. I know we have quite a few applications to go through, but I'm going to offer up a 4-minute quick comfort break before we dive into those. So if we can come back at 10:20, that would be terrific. All right. I see everybody back. At least I think I do. Okay. So we are going to move on to agenda item number 6, which is the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation to the board pertaining to approval of behavior analyst applicants. So we will start with Dr. Davey, please.
I think we have some
Oh, sorry, Dr. Tim. I'm sorry. Are there recusals or
just disclosures? Yeah.
Disclosures.
Yeah, I just have a few disclosures. So application number 6, Jeremiah Caro, 10, Natasha Weber, and 23, Elisa Cook. I was a professor there as well. They were finishing up their program at their when they were working on their master's degree. I just want to note that, but can review and address and vote objectively with these files.
Excellent. Yeah, and I'll follow that up, Madam Chair, with I would like to note that applicant number 11, Shannon Masamitsu, my apologies if I butchered that one, and application 18, Rachel Jewell, that indicated on their application they currently or were previously employed or received supervision at an organization where I'm currently employed. However, given my position and responsibilities, I do not know these individuals personally, nor was I involved in their clinical duties, and therefore believe I can be impartial in reviewing these applications. I'd further note that application number 15, Riley Matisse, and application 23, that in the past I've been affiliated with the organizations where they also receive supervision, but same statement, believe I can be impartial in reviewing their applications.
Sounds good. All right. And thank you for prompting me on that. I always forget the disclosure piece. All right. With that, are you okay to start with your applications?
I am.
Great.
So I'm going to toggle from that note to this note. So let's go ahead and start with application 1, 2, 4, and 5. We'll start there. In my review of those files, including the applicant's education, supervised experience, examination, performance, and decorations, I find them both to be administratively and substantively complete. I'd like to see those move to the full board for licensure. I will note for Susan Hammer that there was a clerical error that board staff has already worked through, which was the dates of her supervision ending on her multiple supervisor form that was flagged back and is being worked on. And then with application 3, Madam Chair, April Bleacher, I don't know, Ms. Miles was going to reach out and see if April could join us today. There she is. Hello, Ms. April. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, good morning.
I appreciate it. On short notice, I had reached out to Z yesterday and asked if you could attend. You answered one of the questions about your current employment, and I'm just going to get to that section right there. And your current employment, your title is listed as a BCBA. And so I wanted to just verify what that employment looked like, what your roles and responsibilities were, and who was supervising you during that role.
Yeah, reached out to me through email this morning, asked me the same question. I responded back to her right away. My role is as a BCBA at Phoenix Autism Center. I started working there February of this year. I've been working with Justin and Brianna Hartman, who are both co-owners of the clinic here in Phoenix. I've been working under the supervision of Mogos Gabri, who's also a BCBA and LBA as well. We've been working on an early adolescent programs for our new clinic here off of 44th Street in McDowell that we just opened last month. And I've been working on this program with the supervision from Mogos because he has a lot of experience working with the adolescents age range. And then I have some experience as well. But given that I don't have my LBA, I'm still receiving supervision from him while I have my LBA application in progress.
Okay. And so the reason this just flagged for people that understand is like the title BCBA, the term behavior analyst is protected under statutes in Arizona. And so having a title such as BCBA could convey to the public that you have full authorization to operate in the state, which you do not. You are required to be under supervision of someone who is an LBA. And so the reason I asked is because of that title listed on your application. And I think your explanation is sufficient to be able to move your application forward, unless my committee members have any further questions around that.
Yeah, when I've worked with clients, we call it the practicum student code, the 97151. I don't use like the BCBA code. For example, when I'm working directly, like when I've worked with clients before.
Just as a point of reference, 97151 code is an assessment code that
I'm
required.
sorry. I've been doing assessments, so that's why I just said the 97151. But when I've done supervision with clients and their behavior technicians, I don't use the same code as a BCBA would because I don't have my LBA yet.
Again, not concerned about the codes because there's multiple modifiers there. So many people can use many codes depending on the rules and regulations of your payer, actually. It's not something that's controlled by this board. However, the title is the part that we have. Like, so we have a practice and a title act. You can't practice as a behavior analyst. You can be extended under the authority of a licensed behavior analyst to practice. That's fine. And that's what you're explaining to us. And then the title is protected as a behavior analyst. You cannot use that title as it conveys to the public a sense that you are licensed and able to provide unsupervised or independent practice in the state. And so again, that's kind of the question there. So I just want to make sure that you're aware of that, as well as our other applicants and people that are getting ready to apply, that you know, if you need to talk to your agencies about what your title is and explain to them that you cannot and should not be using that that vernacular. And if you do, expect questions from this committee as you move forward.
Okay. Yeah, I will let them know. Thank you.
Thank you. And so, Madam Chair, if there are no questions, then I would add Ms. April's application to the list to move forward to the board for full licensure.
Thanks very much. All right. The next batch. Ms. Malice, go ahead.
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to give the first code word, and the word is LASSO, LASSO, LASSO. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Malice, for the reminder. All right. So we'll move on to my list of applicants, which is applicants 6 through 11. I will start with my clean list. So applicant number 6, Jeremiah Caro. Number 8, Simlajana Clark. So sorry if I mispronounce your name. Number 10, Natasha Weber. And number 11, Shannon, Dr. David has said this better than I did, Masamitsu. Again, very sorry. My review of these files, including the applicant's education, supervised experience, examination performance, and declaration, I find them to be both administratively and substantially complete, and would like to see them move to the board. Just a notation, the applicant number 11, it was coming back from a fair. Our last meeting, we asked for some clarification, and she was able to get her supervisors to send those updates to us. So I just wanted board staff to be aware. So those are my four that are good to go. But I do have concerns for number 7, Courtney Brown Hoger. So on the employment, under the employment title, it says RBT / BCBA. So I'm not sure. It's hard for me to scan all of the participants. But do we know if Miss Brown Horgan is on with us?
Yes, ma'am. I'm right here.
All right. So first, can you tell us if you are working in the state of Arizona?
I am employed. When I did my application, I was employed with a company here in Arizona that I started off with as an RBT. When I tested in December for my credentialing, I was given the BCBA title, but very similarly to those who have gone before me, I was practicing under the supervision of a licensed BCBA and utilizing the codes that those that don't have the BCBA credentialing would use. So I was receiving supervision at the time that I was working with the clients. My supervisor was on with me in that process. My current company that I joined with in May, very similar.
So very similar that someone where you're working right now, someone is who is a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Arizona is providing supervision?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Same caution that Dr. Davey just went over. You know, the codes we're not concerned with, it is the use of that term BCBA. So since you're not licensed, But you can't be calling yourself a behavior analyst here in the state of Arizona. But since you are getting supervision, then unless my committee members have issue that I'd like to remove, I would like to move that this one gets pushed to the board for approval. All right, my next one, and thank you very much for being on the call. Ms. Hogan, it makes things a lot easier when you guys are able to come and answer our questions. My last one is applicant number 9, Lenny Day. On the employment, there is a start date of June 14th, 2022 with no end date, but there's no employer listed. And there's also, for the employer, it just says NA and the position also says NA. But we are certified. And so if we're practicing here, I don't know what exactly we're up to. So I just have concerns without having access to employment. So by chance, is Lindley Day on with us this morning? I don't see her popping up. If anyone else sees her, please let me know. Okay. So with that, I personally, unless my committee members disagree, would like to issue a FAIR to get some clarity about what we're doing in the state of Arizona in terms of employment, or if we're employed outside of the state of Arizona. It's just not clear on the application. Alrighty. Those are my lists. Ms. Denton, we'll move on to you, please.
Unmuting. All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I will go through. I have applicants number 12 through 19. This includes Miriam Poulter, Brooke Oltisk, Annalisa Mikado, Riley Mattis, Rebecca Lepinitz, Miguel Solerio, Rachel Julg, and Shuling Saylor. And if I mispronounced any of those names, I ask for grace. Okay, so I'm going to take them in two different chunks. I'm going to go through my clean list first. The clean list includes applicant number 13, Ms. Olsik, applicant number 14, Annalisa Mikado, applicant number 15, Riley Mattis, applicant number 16, Rebecca Lepines, applicant number 18, Rachel Julg, and applicant number 19, Shuling Saylor. I will note that applicant number 13, Brooke Oltsik, she was a FAIR that came back to us. We asked for additional information. It was provided. I believe the documentation that was provided remediated the committee's concerns. And then there was also, we had reached out to applicant number 16, Rebecca Lepines, because her address did not match on the BACB certification verification page as well as her application, but she provided clarification to board staff. I don't believe we have to hold anything up for this. So with these applicants, I would recommend that they move forward to the full board for potential approval. The next one that I'll go through is since Miguel Solorio is on the call, we ask that he be present today. Hello. I just had a question for you.
Yes,
your application is complete. I just need to know a little bit about your practice. I noted on your application that you've been working for Centria Healthcare as a behavior consultant since January of 2025. I just wanted to confirm, have you served any Arizona members? Have you supervised any supervisees? Are you receiving appropriate supervision from a licensed behavior analyst? Just kind of the same as we've talked about for a couple of other applicants today.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. No, ma'am. I left Centria because I didn't feel comfortable with the, I left Centria after 45 days, I believe, of employment because it seemed confusing and I didn't want to put my license at risk. And because this is how I feed my family and also, you know, advocate for the families that, you know, the bilingual families that I work with. So I've only worked, it was my brief, I only worked briefly at Centria and it was always under a Arizona licensed behavior analyst. And during that short tenure, the My LBA was, I had two, and one was in Colorado and one was in Florida. So I felt a bit, it was a bit anxiety inducing with regard to just legalities of how things were operating. And I decided to terminate employment and just wait for the application process to.
Second question, are you currently employed?
I'm employed, yes, ma'am, but okay. Not by WisdomTree in Arizona.
Okay, where are you currently employed?
I'm currently employed in New Mexico.
Okay, so you are not currently serving any Arizona members?
No, ma'am.
Okay, unless other committee members have questions about this, I have no concerns about moving this application forward as well for full licensure in the state of Arizona to the full board.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. That's very helpful to hear, you know, where you are and what you're doing so that we don't have any concerns needing to issue a letter that delays your license. So just to everyone who's on this call today, being present when your application is reviewed is something you should recommend to all your friends because it helps us move things forward in a more expeditious fashion. Thank you very much. Okay, the last application that I have that I need to chat about is Miriam Poulter. Is Miriam on the call today? I didn't see her, but I want to confirm because there are two phone numbers on here and I just want to make sure one of them is not her. No? Okay. All right, so Ms. Poulter, when reviewing her application for licensure, she received all of her supervision in the state of Massachusetts. Massachusetts began requiring licensure for behavior analysts in 2013. The law was signed to an effect in January of that year, and then regulations governing that licensure went into practice on June 5th of 2015. Okay, so we're just going to keep this in mind here. Now, in Arizona, we do require that all supervision is overseen by a licensed behavior analyst if licensure is required in the state where you accrued your supervision hours. So, with that being said, Ms. Poulter did accrue all of her supervision from February 2021 until June of 2022. She received all of her supervision under one supervisor. This one supervisor was not licensed in the state of Massachusetts until July 2nd of 2021, which means from February, March, April, May, and June, she received supervision hours that were not by a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Massachusetts. So I asked board staff to reach out to Ms. Poulter and provide some more detailed information about the number of hours that she received each month to see if perhaps from July, once she had that supervisor until the end of her supervision experience, did she accumulate the 1,500 hours that are required for licensure in the state of Arizona? So when I looked through this, just to, you know, help my fellow committee members, in September of 2021, you know, we know that the BACB only allows for 130 hours per month of experience to be accumulated. So I did discount some of these hours whenever I calculated this amount because she exceeded 130 hours on some months. She had a monthly verification form that showed 131 hours. October was 138 hours. November was 137. December was 130. January, 131. February, 135. March, 135. April, 92. May, 132, and June, 64. So after I went through and discounted the hours that exceeded 130 per month, what I came up with was 1,196 hours that were supervised by a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Massachusetts. So it does appear that there are 304 hours that are additionally needed in order to qualify for licensure in the state of Arizona. So what I would recommend is we reach out with a FAIR to this applicant. She did submit her application, you know, a little while ago. So there is a possibility that she's been practicing under a licensed behavior analyst and has continued hours that she could report to satisfy these remaining 304 hours. So I would like to issue a FAIR to ask if she has any additional supervision that can count towards this, because right now we have to discount anything that happened before July 2nd, 2021.
I agree with you, Ms. Denton. Ms. Pakanon, can we use the new form, the new proposed form for the supervision attestation?
Yes, Madam Chair. Just to remind the committee members, we have created what we're calling a supplemental supervised experience form. And so in these instances, Zakiya will send that form to the applicant so they can have that their supervisor or supervisors complete that form, and the data comes back to you in that format. So it's fairly consistent, quite consistent with what you're used to seeing with respect to verifications.
Thank you, Ms. Pakanon.
Madam Chair.
All set, go ahead, Dr.
So I just want to talk a little bit about the time frame. So Ms. Denton, on the Massachusetts side, you mentioned that licensure went live June 5th, right, of 2015.
That is what I could dig up as far as even though licensure went into effect, whenever there started being that regulation of like, yes, mm-hmm. now, like you have to be licensed. Do you have different information?
No, that's the date. And actually, we put that date on the multiple supervisors form, like what days they go live. My question really is, knowing a little bit about Massachusetts, it goes through an allied board of health licensure process. And I don't know if it's a direct license or if it's a process similar to Arizona. But if it's similar process to Arizona, like a 3 or 4 month delay, particularly around the startup of a license process, may not have been to anybody's fault. It may not have been out of rules and regulations of the state of Massachusetts at the time. They may have had some grace period there. And so, you know, probably two different paths we probably want to look at is maybe having board staff reach out to Massachusetts and see when licenses started actually being printed and being out the door versus the actual effective date. And so that we're not penalizing this individual if they have not been under supervision, right? I would hate for them to come back and say, well, we looked at it. I'd like to just look at both possibilities. Does that lapse make sense from in Massachusetts, or does it not?
Because if it was in 2015 that, you know, this went through and her supervision occurred in 2021, do you think?
But you're saying, I thought you said that the individual wasn't licensed until later in what date did you say she was licensed?
So the supervision experience occurred from February 1st of 2021.
Yeah, I see that.
And then the supervisor was licensed on July 2nd of 2021.
Okay, sorry. I was thinking it was she was licensed in 15 because you had the 4 months, but I see what you're saying. It's not necessarily the start of Massachusetts. I got you. I got the dates crossed.
I just wanted to make sure that everyone was aware of the gap between, because I know we've encountered this before with Massachusetts, where there was like that new licensure and someone who was coming through. And so I just wanted to just remind the committee of, you know, when things went into effect and the difference between 2021 and 2015.
Sorry, I've started rattle through my head on the effective date and went down the wrong path, but you're exactly right. That does seem excessive. And so I think you're on the right track. Thank you.
Those are all of my applications.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Denton. All right, Dr. Stenhoff, over to you, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I wanted to talk about applications. Well, let's just start off with application number 20, Kristen Mayer. She submitted a verification form that was signed in 2015, so over 10 years ago, exceeding the 7-year document maintenance requirement. I had a question, but I don't know if it's even necessary to worry about, but was there an attempt to get the verification forms from the supervisor? But then I go to, well, the supervisor is not necessarily required to have them anyway, any longer, because it's been over 7 years. So if any committee members have any opinion one way or the other, but I think we're over the 7 years, we can't really request it anyway. So... is everybody good with that one? Okay. And then I want to talk about Jennifer Barreto. From what I can tell, her current hours are a total of 1,065 hours, 0.92. which under the requirement of the 1500 indicates a deficit of 434.08 hours to meet the requirements for the state supervision requirements. That was what I noticed in the documentation. I was possibly hoping that Ms. Barreto would be here. I don't know if she is. Okay, well, in that case, for that application, I would like to submit a FAIR, just requesting whether there are additional hours that could be submitted for that to be accepted for consideration for licensure. So, Ms. Pacino, did you get good on that? Okay. All right. So, given that, so applications, Ms. Mayer, Ms. Lewis, and Ms. Cook, my reviews of the file, including the applicant's education, supervised experience, examination, performance, and declarations, I find them to be both administratively and substantively complete and recommend that those applications move forward to the board for approval.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff. So with my count, we have three FAIRs that need to come out, need to go out. Number nine, Ms. Denton, remind me who yours just was here.
Applicant number 12, Miriam Poulter.
Oh, Poulter, sorry. Yep, number 12, and then number 22. All right. Do I have a motion?
I'll make the motion, but I'd like to move items 1 through 23 as discussed.
Second.
All righty, do we have a second? All right, thank you. Dr. Davey has made the motion and Dr. Stenhoff has seconded that to move the applications as discussed. Any further discussion? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? All right, motion carries. All right, thanks to all the applications or all the applicants for being here who did come. I will say only three FAIRs seems like maybe a new record for us guys. So very, very nice that folks are able to complete those and be here when we have questions. I do see a hand raised. Ms. Parker, go ahead.
Hi. I didn't hear my name at all. I was emailing with Zakia to be on this call in regards to my licensure. I wasn't sure exactly what my licensure application number was, but I went on the website and the number was a lot higher than anything that anyone had said. So I didn't know if
you were my, you were part of the first pack. You were number 5 on the application process. Ms. Parker.
Okay. Number 5. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're being moved forward. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All righty. All right. Thank you to board staff and my fellow committee members through going through all of those applicants. We will move on to item 6B, which is behavior analyst applications for licensure by universal recognition. We have one applicant and Dr. Stenhoff is the lead. So if Dr. Stenhoff, you can help us out.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is the application of Mackenzie Gelfund. According to the ARS 32-4302, there's some recommendation or requirements for applicants to be licensed. I just want to review those for the purpose of the attendees. But they need to establish residence in the state. The person is currently licensed or certified at least, licensed in another state for at least a year, and the person has previously passed an examination required for the license if required by the other state. The other point I want to come back to is currently licensed for at least a year in good standing with that current state. So the applicant produced information. She's been a VCBA since December of 2021, and she's provided evidence of being a Michigan behavior analyst since December of 2021 in good standing. She submitted her fingerprint clearance evidence and also provided evidence of residency. So based on the review of the file, the examination performance and declarations, I found it to be administratively and substantively complete and recommend that it move forward to the board for approval.
All right, thank you. Is there a motion? Or does that serve as your motion, Dr. Stenhoff?
Let's use that as a motion then, Madam
Perfect.
Chair.
Is there a second?
A second.
All right. The motion has been made by Dr. Stenhoff. It's been seconded by Dr. Davey. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? All right. Motion carries. All right. We will now move on to agenda item number 7, which is the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding requests from Timothy Pease to withdraw his behavior analyst application. So this request for application withdrawal was initially reviewed and discussed with the committee during the April 25th, 2025 meeting. Due to the need to question the applicant, the committee voted to table the matter and invite or subpoena Mr. Pease to attend today's review. Staff, can you please confirm that Mr. Pease is present so the committee continue with the review?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pease. I was going to ask board staff, but go ahead. Dr. Davey?
I'd just like to note that this individual, it looks like it indicated on the application that was put forward that he was previously employed at where I'm currently employed. However, I have no knowledge of this individual or their activities and feel as if I can be impartial in going through this application or this process.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Davey. Okay, so since Mr. Pease is present, I will just give a real brief summary for the committee. So as mentioned before, Mr. Pease submitted application for his behavior analytic licensure on November 26th of 2024. After his application was reviewed, he sent an email to board staff requesting a withdrawal of his application since he's relocating out of state. During the email exchange between Mr. Pease and board staff, it became evident that Mr. Pease had been practicing as a behavior analyst in the state of Arizona without a license. So while some documentation was submitted, it wasn't clear to our committee members to make a review. So we did ask that we table the matter so we could ask questions directly to Mr. Pease. Do any committee members have questions for me? All right, Mr. Pease, if you could please unmute your microphone, introduce yourself for the record, and then also you're welcome to make a brief statement to the committee for up to 5 minutes at this time.
Hi, my name is Timothy Alexander Pease. I was a practicing applicant in Arizona under my former company. With everything moving forward, there was information that was requested of me, which I'm no longer privy to due to no longer being employed within there. I did submit the email address of the LBA who I was practicing under as well too, because they do retain that information. Also, if there is any need for that information as well too, our HR department at my former employment is possibly able to provide that information for you as well too. Reason documentation was sent as a template is just due to HIPAA compliance, and I wanted to make sure that the former patients that I was supervising while being an applicant, that their information was protected.
Okay. All right. Thank you. The reason we asked, well, at least for me, why I wanted you to appear is some of the documentation that you sent in, and committee members, I'm referencing on page 17 and 18 of the PDF document. There is two documents. One's labeled rendering provider LVA consultation documentation, and the other one is monthly supervision documentation summary. It's said to be completed by the end of each month by applicant and supervising LVA. The form itself looks lovely, but the one that you sent it, there's no data. So I don't see records of supervision. So I was hoping you could provide some clarity. Do you have these Excel documents filled out with that information?
I do not have them in my possession. As I've said, those are under my former employment and they have those on record. Okay. And what I was sent in, I was told would be appropriate in nature to be sent in to you all and to be acceptable. And that was provided
You were told.
Informed to me by my former clinical director, and it was also informed by the regional director as well too.
Okay, so from someone, staff at ABC, your prior employer, they yes. said this is what you should, okay. Did you request the documents with the data filled out where it would have had dates and times and signatures?
Because of HIPAA compliance that it was not going to be available to me.
Okay.
Can I hop in?
Yes, ma'am.
The really good news is that the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners is not a violation of HIPAA. So, you know, all information that comes to us is confidential. As a state body, we have access to those documents. So for everyone who's on the call today, if you have information that has been requested from this committee or the board, the full board, do not worry that you are violating HIPAA and that you're going to have mega fines.
Thanks, Ms. Denton. We don't want mega fines for sure. Okay, that answers my questions as to why they're not filled out here. Those are my questions for the moment. Other committee members?
I guess my question would be, were they filled out to the applicant? Like, you know, is it to the best of your knowledge, were these complete? Like, I see that there are some patient names in the documentation, but were they, did you complete these? It says that at the top of page 18, to be completed by the end of each month by the LBA supervisor and applicant. Is it your statement today that you were engaged in that behavior with your LBA supervisor and that these records do exist and completed?
Yes. Before I left my former employment, everything was up to date and up to the standards and codes that were put upon us as an applicant. So I do have everything up to date up until I believe it was April 2nd was my last day of employment. And it should have been done for that month, if I am not mistaken, as well, too, up to the second.
Dr. Davey, are you pausing for now?
I'm good. I just wanted, like, my question just was, like, it's great that we see the template. I wanted to just hear from him that it was actually executed. I mean, I think that that's important to know from his standpoint.
Yeah. Mr. Peasy said, you know, through April 2nd, was that your last day? And then were you done providing services in Arizona, or that was just your last day at ABC and you went somewhere else? Can you just kind of give me a timeline of when you were done practicing in our state?
Yeah. April 2nd was the last day that I practiced in Arizona.
Right. Other committee members, questions for Mr. Pease?
I guess one of my questions is, Mr. Pease, why are you withdrawing your request? Why is your request to withdraw?
I no longer live in Arizona, and I took a position, and I am now licensed as a BCBA in Nebraska.
And it's my understanding from board staff that the application is fairly incomplete. Is that correct, Ms. Packinen?
Yes, the application is not administratively complete.
And did I read somewhere that he has yet to even pay the fees for the application process? Is that correct? Is that possible?
I'm of the understanding that he did pay the fee. Ms. Malice, I think she has the answer to that question.
Yes, Dr. Davey, he paid part of the fees, but not all of the fees. That's due to the way the system calculates the fees, where you have to put in both of those percentages. And so it'll pay one at a time. So if you do not click them both, it'll only calculate the one fee.
So Ms. Malice, did he only pay the 10% or 15% to the general fund?
I believe he paid the other amount, the larger amount. I would have to double check on that.
Okay. Dr. Davey, I'm glad you asked the question, because I think that any recommendation that the committee makes to the board would have to be predicated on paying the entire fee. And just for purposes of educating anyone who's listening, the fees by statute are non-refundable, and the fee is not a guarantee of any particular outcome, such as a license being granted. The fee represents the cost of processing the application. And so that's why, you know, the fees are necessary and non-refundable.
Yeah, I think the fact that we're having to bring this, board staff's had to work on this, the board, the committees haven't had this in front of them. This is like, we need to make sure that all fees are paid. So any part of any motion would be that those are rectified. And the rest of it, you know, the transcripts and the license information, I mean, I think we have, we can move without that in the fingerprint piece. I'm fine with that, but I think that definitely want the entire application fee paid for us to move forward.
Other questions? Oh, Ms. Malice, go ahead.
Yes, Madam Chair, just to clarify, he does owe the smaller amount of the $52.50.
Thank you for that information. Okay, if there's no other questions, then I think we can move to discussion. I'll start. I understand his wanting to, you know, remove it, not be licensed here if we're not going to work here. In terms of, you know, him practicing as a behavior analyst without having a license, I do see, I know everyone on the call can't see all the things we can see. I do want it to be noted that there is a supervision contract that was signed by an LVA between Mr. Pease and a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Arizona. It does go over, you know, that she, well, actually, I think it's she. The supervisor is responsible ultimately for those cases. If you were listening earlier to the call, you know, Ms. Denton brought up some of those questions of who holds ultimate accountability for those cases. So I will say that this contract, at least to me, reads fairly clearly that the LBA is the one who's ultimately responsible, and that's important. That being said, I do wish that we would have those forms filled out in front of us as opposed to just a template. I understand that Mr. Pease is not in possession of them. However, I would have expected Action Behavior Centers, knowing where the request is from, if they didn't feel comfortable release them to Mr. Pease, that they could have directly emailed board staff, and that would have been a way to solve this problem as opposed to us wondering, is Mr. Pease's word good enough to say that these were filled out? I am struggling with that a little bit, but I'll let other committee members chime in.
I would just say that we didn't subpoena Action or any other agency for that case. Like, we only did the request of information to the applicant, which he would not have the ability to probably turn that over. And as much as the board has the ability to subpoena and get files, we would have had to request that directly from the agency, and would have to do that in the future for any agency that we're interested in. It's probably wise that this individual does not maintain those records after leaving employment, right? I mean, for all those that are listening, like, you don't want to keep client files if you move from one job to another and then accidentally have your computer stolen or your email hacked, and all of a sudden you're on the hook for those mega fines that Ms. Ten spoke of. And so I think the question is, do we want to subpoena an agency to get this information in its entirety to be able to fully adjudicate this, which is fine. I think that we just need to realize that this could be the case in the future as well. Like, when we think about going after FAIR requests, we may need to broaden those FAIR requests outside of the applicant for board staff to be able to request it from either previous agencies, you know, current agencies, just so we're getting all this information. Because the applicant, again, I think hands are somewhat tied in what information they would be, what would be shared back to them, right, from their previous employer, regardless of who they are. It's just, they're not going to just hand over case files because the individual was subpoenaed.
Right, but Mr. Freeman didn't have case files either, but it's still a documentation that was given to him by a prior agency that said these were the dates of supervision. Like, they didn't have to release this entire document, but they could have given him a supervision log with names blocked out, things like that. Like, I think we could have gotten some relative data with still protecting private health information or personal health information.
But I think the point is, like, we've got to ask for what we want, right? I think if we ask for it, we'll get it. Instead of, I think it's more of our function, right? And like, what is it tactically that we're interested in seeing? And then who's the holder of that when we do these FAIR requests? Like, I think that it's just something we need to clean up, but I don't think that any agency would have a problem giving it to us. I don't think that there may be agencies that are, more, we'll call them sophisticated, but maybe perhaps more concerned around legalities that are saying, like, we're not going to just release this over to you. We need to be asked for it so we can do that. So I just think that we need to think about that in the FAIRs going forward, so that we're not delaying adjudication of matters, right? I mean, I don't think there's any problem asking an agency for the information. I think let's just do it the first shot.
Ms. Denton?
I do believe we asked for supervision logs. So like that was, I think that was pretty clear, but
you asked that to the applicant, right? Like the applicant, right. Like we didn't, if we turn around tomorrow, like if the committee says we're going to subpoena action tomorrow for the supervision logs for this individual, then they're turned over, right? Like the applicant necessarily may or may not have those in the future. Like any applicant we see may or may not have access to that.
Maybe that's a conversation for later, but I do believe the BACB says supervisees are responsible for keeping their supervision documentation, the other thing that I would say that I would like from this supervision agreement is I don't know when it ended, I love the supervision contract and it tells me when it started, but without documentation of what was going on, all we do have is the word of someone when it ended. So we don't have documentation from the supervisor necessarily how long that supervision occurred or what it was. But if it did end on April 2nd, I believe was what was said, the supervision contract, as long as it was followed, is clear cut, So Dr. Byra, Madam Chair, I'm kind of with you on a little bit of a dilemma here with missing information. Do we have enough to determine any direction to go?
Ms. Din, I would just point out that the supervision contract does have a term and a survival clause in it on page 20 that talks about when the agreement being in full force up until certain points. So while there's not for 1 year, it does have the term and survival section number 4 remains in full force and effect until applicant is permitted to treat patients independently.
Right. I think her point, and Ms. Denton, I don't mean to speak for you, but I think her notation, not that this supervisor wouldn't have kept up her end of the bargain, it's just we don't know, like Mr. Pease is saying his last day is April 2nd. Like, were we meeting consistently up until April 2nd, or did we just meet in December without other documentation? There's no other timestamp, I think, is Ms. Denton's process, but Ms. Denton, apologies if that's not what you're thinking. Ms. Papadon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If Ms. Galvin were here, what I believe she would be suggesting to the committee is that if you are contemplating issuing a subpoena to Ms. Newman for records, you would need to first open an investigation of which she would be the subject, and then that exercise of obtaining those records would fall under that that complaint investigation.
Madam Chair. Can I speak, Madam Chair?
Yes, ma'am. Sorry.
Okay, wonderful. Would it be unreasonable to ask Mr. Pease to ask his supervisor to supply this to the board without opening a complaint? We don't have evidence necessarily of unlicensed practice, but we don't have documentation that it wasn't unlicensed practice, right? So like we just don't have that information before we I'd like to know what other committee members think here, but before we full-blown go into an investigation, could we just table this and come back whenever, if Mr. Pease, presuming you have a good relationship, if you are able to talk to your previous supervisor, to just say, here's an email address directly to board staff. You don't have to send it to me as I'm not a current employee anymore. Can you send this over without opening an investigation?
Ms. Pakanon, and then Mr. Pease, I see your hands up as well. We'll get to you, I promise.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd actually, if it's okay, I think Mr. Pease may have comments that are specific to this this issue that the board is, that the committee is discussing. So I'd like to have him go first.
Okay. Mr. Pease, please.
Yes, I. When it came to contacting my former clinical director, I did send out an email. From what I do understand about emails as well, too, going in, I have seen in the past where I myself had an account with my former company and it did have blockage. So I don't know what caused for those issues to occur. So I did reach out, but I did not hear a response back from them. And this was entailing to providing the information that you're requesting as well, too.
Okay. Question about that. So the Excel documents that were blank, the templates, were those just things that you had saved? Like, where did you access those?
They were provided to me by the clinical director.
And that clinical director is not the same as your supervisor?
My supervisor and my clinical director are different. That's correct.
Okay.
So my, while I was collecting my hours, my supervisor is actually at a different location now as well, too. So I also came from a different company before I was with my former employment as well, too. So I did have hours underneath a different company as well. So I do have multiple areas. My hours collected are from multiple areas, not just from
one company. Oh, sorry. I'm not talking about like to sit for your exam. I'm talking about the ones, the monthly supervision.
Yeah.
Summary.
So my clinical director. Okay, sorry. Yes. Then at that point, my clinical director was also the one supervising me as well too, and they had moved into the role of clinical director in that time frame.
Okay. I think because we're talking in so many he's and she's, I'm getting a little lost. So yeah. I have on your signature, Jenny Lee Newman is who was the LBA who signed to do your oversight as an L. Yes. Okay. So is that the person that's not the person who sent you the templates?
That was the person who sent me the templates. I'm sorry for any confusion about that.
So I think what we're asking is, could you email Ms. Newman and say, hey, can you get me some dates and times?
I have reached out with my personal email and I have not heard anything back. And I did email her company email.
Okay.
So.
Okay. So the templates, so there was like, she sent those to you like a very long time ago and you just still have access to them. That's where I'm also still getting confused.
Yeah. It was sent out before I left the company. All the information that you received was before I left my former employment. So.
I see. Okay. Thank you. Okay. I'm seeing things more clearly now. That makes sense. Ms. Pakanon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm hearing that, the committee has some concerns relative to Ms. Newman's conduct. And so that's why I'm sort of getting a little concerned about trying to compel her to submit records if I'm concerned about her due process rights, even though we know that there is statutory authority to compel the submission of documents through a subpoena, and also that one of the instances of unprofessional conduct is failure to supply to the board information that the board has requested or subpoenaed. And it is on those, because of those, that statutory language, that I'm getting concerned about looking for ways to compel the submission of information from another person. What I heard several minutes ago was a suggestion to table this matter. I think that's the right thing to do because we would prefer to have Ms. Galvin, your legal advisor, weigh in on this.
Okay.
I need a motion.
I
move that we table this until we can have the board's attorney present to provide guidance to the committee member.
I would just add to, I think that's fine. I'll second that motion. I think we also need to figure out, like, what is our question, right? I mean, I think that the question we need to ask Ms. Galvin, like, are we really concerned that this individual was not supervised when there's a signed supervision contract that they're bound to? This is also the individual that signed off on their supervision hours to become a BCBA. Like, what's our hang up? And I think we better be able to articulate that because I'm struggling when I'm seeing documentation. Like, I agree, Ms. Denton, that Mr. P should have some documentation around his supervision. And should have supplied that to us if he had it. If he doesn't, that's on him. But I think we need to formulate, like, where it is we're hung up on this, because to me, there's a lot of, like, we just need to be clear about what the question is. And I think this goes to my first statement earlier, like, the information we're requesting, we need to know who actually holds it and who has the ability to give it to us. I don't know that there's extended authority, and we can ask Gene this, just because we give a licensee or an applicant a subpoena saying, give us all this information, that then they can share that with an employer or past employer, and then they legally can act. I don't know that that extends. I think that it would have to be a separate subpoena. And I think that if we are going to do that, then we've got to start looking at that going forward, of making sure we're asking for all that documentation, if we're truly thinking that a supervision contract is not enough to make the point where you have an LBA attesting to that supervision. I mean, we're really starting now to question, like, how much evidence do we need? And it's not just this case, like, it's going to be ongoing cases that we have.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point of what do we need. And I do think standardization is important. And I don't think we've been standard, you know, I don't think there's been consistency, and that's probably a bigger problem. Maybe that needs to be agendized too. But I think just having a contract in place saying I'm going to do these things, that's a future promise. The templates that he has that are blank, if I was to see those filled out, then my question would be answered, that it wasn't just a one-off, or it wasn't, you know, we only reviewed one of my clients, but he has a team in his email. He had a team of 8 RVTs. I don't know how many clients total that was. Maybe Mr. Pease, you can enlighten us as well. But if we have a substantial caseload, were we overseeing
that? I would think that if that's the question, then we might as well just go ahead and subpoena ABC right now and ask for the client, like, ask for those completed. Like, I don't know. I mean, if that's what we're going to want to prove the point, right, then let's get it. Like, I don't know that we need Gene to, I mean, we can ask Gene, I guess, have board staff ask Gene if that's okay. But if that's the question, right, it's like, we see a contract, good job. We see these forms as templates. We understand that the individual does not have access due to HIPAA concerns, or and should not have access, and does not have his own documentation that he kept, which would be on him as part of his requirements as a BACB or as a BCBA. Then the person that has the documentation that's going to make us all feel better is the employer and the supervisor. And so let's go ahead and get that subpoena out so we can adjudicate the matter in a timely fashion.
I guess my question is, Ms. Packett, I don't know what the process is for that. Are we allowed to just say that?
Madam Chair and Dr. Davy, we can check with Ms. Galvin early next week when she is back. And if she advises that we can move forward with the subpoena, then we'll do that. If we are not to do that, then this matter will come back on a future agenda. So I think the committee should give us direction. I hear Dr. Davy saying, you know, there could be other materials that we could be collecting and asking If this is to come back to the committee, we want to ensure that you have what you need to move forward with a recommendation.
And I think we as a committee need to think, like, let's just think that this application had gone through and been on as one of the ones we reviewed today, right? Would this have gone through as is? Like, would this have gone through and been approved? Or, you know, if the answer is no, then we need to make sure that we're asking for this same exact amount of information, proactively as part of the application process.
Well, I think we have started. I mean, it's not been completed. I mean, Ms. Pakanon can keep me honest here, but we have made adjustments to the application process that says, are you currently working in Arizona? And if the answer is yes, then they do need to be supplying documentation to us.
So I think that's the part, like one of them today, the reason I had Ms. April on the call was she answered yes and said, I provide, you know, ABA services to children. And so I think we need to, and I think that, you know, we can have the conversation of like, we need more than that, right? We need a little bit more information about the service that's being provided. And so I think it's just an ongoing process as we're cleaning it up of like making sure we're asking for the right information. So that we're, again, like my concern is not necessarily this one, it's delaying applications in the future, right? Like we've already got a backlog, and if we can like today was a record, you know, you said on the fair, so if we can continue to clean up our process, then, you know, we can reduce those fair requests and get people licensed sooner.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's, I mean, unfortunately, like the new application process, you know, we won't see that until we get through all of the old ones, but that definitely has been, you know, changes that we've recommended so that everyone is getting, you know, consistent review, which I think is also important. But if, you know, Mr. Freeman was on earlier and he wasn't able to supply the documentation that he had, you know, I had the same trepidations as Tisha or Ms. Denton did until I saw that separate Excel document where it did have timestamps. If he hadn't provided me that and only had his kind of welcome to be a BCBA at his former company, that to me wouldn't have been sufficient documentation either.
So yeah, I think maybe those kinds of examples like that we can put in there is like, here are the things that would be helpful to us. I think that that's a good point, right? I just think like standardizing that process. Mm-hmm. So we're not, you know, one day saying one thing to one applicant and one thing to another, I think is important.
All right. So do we need a motion, Ms. Pakanon, here of if we can directly subpoena for these records from Miss, oh, and I forgot her last name again, from Miss Newman, then we would like to do that. And then if we're not allowed to do that, dependent upon Miss Galvin's, you know, ruling, then we'll have to come back to it.
Yes, Madam Chair, let's get a motion on the table for the record.
Okay, Ms. Denton.
I think I still have a motion on the table to table it. Do we need to deal with that? First, do I need to withdraw my motion to table while we do this?
Maybe just do a friendly amendment to talk to like the board staff, like table and friendly amendment for board staff to talk to Jean about a potential subpoena to the employer for the records.
Okay. What Dr. Davey said, friendly amendment to my motion to table with what he said.
And I believe I seconded it, and so I'll second again.
Great. All right. So a motion has been made and amended by Ms. Denton. It has been seconded by Dr. Davey that we would like to subpoena action for records from Ms. Newman for supervision records. And if not, that it will be tabled and brought back to us. Any further discussion? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? All right, motion carries. So for this piece, I assume board staff will be in touch with Mr. Pease as well. Is that right, Ms. Pakenham?
Yes, Madam Chair. We will notice him when this is coming back on a future agenda. He's also going to be noticed of the requirement to submit the delinquent application fee.
Okay. That sounds very good. All right. Before we move on to agenda number 8, we will take a quick 5-minute comfort break, and then we come back. I'm sure Ms. Malice will also give us another code word. See you in 5. Dr. Davy.
Yes, Madam Chair. The next code word is bulldogger. It's bulldogger. Thank you.
Are we going to the rodeo?
Yes, we are.
Oh, finally a theme I can follow. I've never gotten your other ones. Okay. Okay, everyone is back. So we are going to move on to agenda item number 8, which is the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation to the board pertaining to a license reinstatement request submitted by Grace Smith. So Dr. Davy, as lead for this matter, could you please give us a summary?
Yes, you can see it here. So we received a request for reinstatement for Ms. Grace Smith. She's completed all the education requirements and has uploaded them to our CEU broker that was reviewed by board staff. She needed to complete approximately 21 and a quarter hours, including some ethics, and she has done so. All of that documentation has was uploaded for your review. In reviewing the request and the CEUs and the attestations and declarations, I believe we can move forward her request for her license to be reinstated to the board. And I'll make that my motion.
Second.
All righty. So there has been a motion made by Dr. Davy. It has been seconded by Dr. Stenha that we move this application, or sorry, reinstatement to the board for acceptance. And so all in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. All right. Opposed? All right. The motion carries. Perfect. We will move on to agenda item number 9, which is the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recent updates from the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, the BACB. Ms. Pakanon, could you please give us an overview of this matter?
Yes, Madam Chair. Just a very brief update from the BACB to regulators. They did supply most of the content from the presentation, the virtual presentation, the first in their series in 2025, titled the BACB Top Ethics Violations. So you have a copy of the slides, the content that they are able to release publicly, that is. And they are offering another opportunity to deliver the same program to regulators on June 24th. There are instructions, of course, for how to register for that event. And they're also notifying regulators that the next new event will be held on July 29th. It will be a fireside chat. So I take that to mean that it will be sort of more of an open forum, you know, to discuss regulatory issues. And I hope that some of our Arizona committee members are able to attend. You have lots of ideas and lots of thoughts. So I think that that would contribute to a very robust discussion on July 29th. So let me know if you have any questions.
Does anyone have questions for Ms. Pakanon? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on to item number 10, which is a discussion, consideration, and possible. Oh, sorry, Ms. Denton.
I have a question. Ms. Pakanon, if we want to attend on July 29th, how do we let you know?
There, I think in the memo, I thought I saw that you send an email to, we used to notify Misty Bloom, send an email to regulatory at bacb.com.
Thank you.
If you are not on the listserv, I believe you can also ask in the same email to be added on the listserv. I believe several or some committee members receive the same updates that I do, but go ahead and add yourself to the list if you'd like.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Sorry about that, Ms. Denton. Okay. Back to number 10. So discussion, consideration, and possible action of obtaining applicant employment updates. So Ms. Pakanon, I'm going to need your help with this. I'm under the impression we were trying to ascertain, like, how do we get better information to board staff, especially when there is considerable delay between when we're applying to maybe when our application is reviewed. So if our employment status has changed or I've moved companies, those kinds of things, how can we get better information to board staff without being burdensome? Because we also can't go back into the application once it's been submitted to update. Did I catch all of that?
You did indeed, Madam Chair. So this is on the agenda by request. I believe it was you, Dr. Vibra, who requested that this agenda item be addressed so that there is hopefully the committee arrives at a comprehensive solution, a comprehensive strategy or set of strategies to ensure that from the time someone applies for the license to the point where it's substantively reviewed, which could be 3 months, 4 months, five or more, depending on how long it takes for the applicant's file to become complete. So we know that's a considerable amount of time that the applicant may experience some employment changes, some relocation changes from one state to another, and so forth. So the fact that the application portal doesn't allow an applicant after submission to go back and change the information that they previously submitted for reasons that we all understand. What is not being understood, I think, by applicants is that they have a 30-day statutory requirement to provide contact information updates. I am certain that that requirement eludes many applicants. Because they can't use the portal, what they need to do is they need to email Zakiya Malice and provide that information. But I think that whole awareness is lacking. So I want the committee to have a very robust discussion, but what I, anytime the committee identifies a challenge, a problem, an issue, I'm going to think about it in terms of what sort of administrative effort can we do to solve this problem, and trying to balance it in such a way so that we aren't asking Zakiya or tasking Zakiya with something that requires a lot of her time when we've been so dedicated to finding strategies to move applications along that don't task her with, you know, more duties than she has time to execute. So my thoughts around this include that when an applicant presses send, submit on their application, within seconds, they receive an automatic email from the system confirming the submission of the application. That's an opportunity, if the applicant reads it, of course, to convey this important information. And I think we really need to use that communication to lean into the requirement that you may be experiencing contact information changes immediately or within the next 30 days, it is your responsibility to notify the board, and that's how you do it. So I think that's very important. There are other touch points too that Zakiya has with applicants where they are noticed of the deficiency, the application deficiency, or, you know, missing items from their application. There's an opportunity to include in that standard notice. It's a template, more or less, except for the specifics of what's missing. But there can be language that can be standardized in that communication, reminding of this requirement. And then finally, there would be the notice that your application is being reviewed by the committee. And if anything has changed since you last heard from me with respect to your contact information, send it to me for entry into the system. So this accomplishes, I think, some of what you are concerned about. I don't know that it addresses everything, but it's a start. And so I wanted to offer those solutions, which we could implement those tomorrow. So if you have questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Ms. Denton.
No question, but I do think that is a phenomenal idea. I think part of the challenge is that our applicants, they don't know how to provide an update to their information if they can't log back into that application. So if we've got some communication coming from board staff that says, this is how you're going to update me, please make sure you're updating me if you have a new job, if you have relocated and you have a new address, or you have a new email address, or, you know, like the list of common changes that we see. So I think if we could do that, I would be in full support of that. I'm not confident that it will remediate all issues, but I think it is a beautiful antecedent strategy.
Thank you. What it doesn't do, and I think we're all pondering this, I know I am, what it doesn't do is if the applicant receiving the notice of complete application and review by the committee, if after receiving that notice, it occurs to them, oh, yes, I have moved, I need to notify the board of that change of information. If that information represents a concern on the part of the committee that there's premature practice prior to licensure, that's the piece I really don't know how to resolve, other than for staff to continue to advocate and maybe use stronger language in the process. Applicants come to the meeting and, you know, be prepared to answer questions. We can point to several applications on today's agenda where the applicant's attendance and participation resolved that very question for the committee, and their applications were are able to move forward to the board. So, I am happy also to retool the language where we more than suggest to applicants come to this agenda review. We advise them that if they are strongly recommended, and if they don't, it may delay the processing of their application.
I'm also wondering, from a touch point standpoint, Ms. Pakanong, because you said as soon as they complete it, they get one. And then once they get notice that they're going to be reviewed, if there's a problem, they would get, you know, touch points in between. But for those who have everything correct, I'm not sure kind of what your system looks like. Is there a way to do like an automatic funnel, like once a month? Like if you're not approved, are you in a list? Is like, I don't know if there's a listserv. Again, I don't know the back end of the system there, but if there's a listserv of these are all of those who are in the review process who have not been approved, like can there just be an automatic email that gets sent out every month of like, hey, just a reminder, again, open rate, I don't know. I mean, we could track it, right? If we have a funnel system like Kajabi or something like that, but would there be a way to have them be, because again, there may be, like you said, 3, 4, 5 months in between. And if everything went well, they won't get an email from Ms. Malice saying, hey, you forgot to, you know, upload this document or we're missing your transcripts. Also, by the way, don't forget to update your employment history and things like that. I'm just wondering if there can be an automated way. So again, we don't have any more burden on board staff to send something out. But if there's an automatic listserv that could just go out once a month with a repeat message just to remind folks of what their requirements are.
Dr. Byra, I like that suggestion very much. What I'm assuming to be the case is that the functionality is more limited than what you're describing. It would require a push on our part, but let me take this idea to our customer support team to find out, is it in the system and I'm not aware of it? Is it a future feature? So let me explore that idea as well.
Okay. Ms. Denton, I saw your hand first.
What if we had an additional question on the application? And the additional question on the application said, you know, we've got the, are you practicing, you know, right now in a behavior analytic capacity? Could we have a follow-up question that says, while you are awaiting licensure in Arizona, who is your licensed behavior analyst supervisor?
I believe when we made those recommendations for changes, we do have that with the option to also upload like a contract.
Great.
Yes, Ms. Denton, I think you were absent from the meeting where we worked on that solution, and we did get it implemented very recently.
Okay, hey, wonderful. That's like
yeah. the a brilliant idea.
My question ever.
Dr. Davey?
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to something we were talking about, like where, you know, there'd be kind of a almost a live doc, a live database of where people stand in the process in terms of like, hey, your application's in and, you know, these are the things we're going through. Ms. Peck, and I wonder if there's a way on the website to publish, you know, like an Excel spreadsheet that has, you know, application identification numbers, maybe not someone's name, and that they, you know, it's like in step one and step two and step three, or on hold because you haven't responded to us, almost like creating a customer service portal that would show kind of like your status at any particular point. I wonder if we can talk to our IT gurus about just publishing like our own internal spreadsheet out to the web that shows that without any identifying information, right? Only the applicant would know what applicant number they are when they receive their email, but they could check their status at any point here. And it would say like it's an initial review and it's on hold because we request, you know, additional documentation's been requested of you. And then it's like we're very transparent about how they're moving through the process, and just something to maybe think about when you're talking to your IT team.
And Dr. Davey, there is a feature in the system which it's helpful and it's transparent to a certain degree, but it also has its limitations. When an applicant logs into the portal, they can see what documents have been received and reviewed and posted to their application by staff. Where the shortcoming comes in is that there's a time lag between I'm an applicant. My understanding is I used parchment.com to have my academic transcript sent to the board. But there may be a delay between, you know, the day that I executed that transaction as the applicant and when Zakiya is able to access the transcript and, you know, upload it to their portal. So what I'm saying is that there is some functionality in the system. It's doesn't work as well as conceptually that it could. And it doesn't. What it also doesn't do is it isn't as granular as what you're suggesting. But there's more conversations I think that we can have around that. We've really tried to figure out how can we minimize the amount of time, knowing that applicants can peek into their application status. How do we minimize the amount of time between, a document that they understand to be in our possession? Well, it kind of sort of is, but it hasn't been reviewed for administrative completedness and uploaded. So we're still trying, I think, to figure out how to leverage that functionality in a way that is advantageous to all of us.
Very good. Thank you.
Ms. Denton.
Whoops. Did I go away?
No, nope, you're there.
I didn't. I okay, wonderful. So like whenever a licensee, like an applicant, they go in there, they can see when they've submitted it, right? Like it's been submitted, or it is, I think the other option is like in review. Something like this. So could it be possible to just change that section instead of having to add like a whole new like spreadsheet feature for every single person? Like if we already have an existing functionality in there, could we just add some additional steps in there instead of just it stays from the time you've submitted it to we received it? Now it's in review for months, right? Could we just add there?
Possibly. That's a great question to bring to our customer support team as well. As I was sort of saying, you know, it's not as granular as we would like it to be, but maybe we can make it so, we just don't know how to do that. Or that may just sort of be standard functionality, because remember, this is a it's an off-the-shelf system, customizable, but only customizable to certain degrees. So there are, I mean, we have great ideas for new functionality all the time, some of which, you know, can be introduced and implemented, and other ideas, they can be put on the, I think they call it the project roadmap, where it's this collection of potential future system enhancements that may or may not, you know, get put into the development queue.
I'm thinking, Ms. Denton, you know, similar to when you submit like a paper for publication, right? It's like submitted, assigned to an editor, right? Like under review by an editor. So maybe just like some bigger benchmarks. So as you're saying, like something in between, maybe not like super duper molecular, but some big,
maybe big customer support jumps. Team can join us for a meeting, and we could give them all of our beautiful ideas to improve their product.
Yes, I can see how from the applicant's perspective, it's a bit cryptic, and there's just the limitations of the functionality that we currently have doesn't inform them a whole lot, and leads to arriving at, you know, conclusions that may or may not be correct. So as much as we were excited about this feature, we have to acknowledge it has its shortcomings too.
Well, it's our job to continuously improve and develop, right? Like that's right. What we're supposed to do. But I think it would also be a beautiful thing for employers as well, because employers, it's not that they're the people necessarily that we govern, right? But all of our applicants, they're almost all of them are employed, right? And their employers are asking them, when are you getting your license? When is it coming? Like, do you have any update? Should you reach out to board staff and like ask them, which creates additional administrative burden on Z. So with that, you know, I think there's multiple benefits to looking at this, so that there's less response that's needed from board staff. It's just log in, take a look at where you are.
Yep. I had one other thought just from a tech component. I know that I have heard on other meetings where folks have said, well, I didn't get the reminder, right? Or it went to my junk email and stuff like that, which I get happens. I'm wondering, again, this would be a TechX Ms. Pakanon, so my apologies. But before I wonder if there's a way before they're able to like do a final submission. I don't know if you guys have gone through a process as you're adding new software or apps and things like that. It'll ask you to like, hey, what's the code that you got to your email address, right? Before you can start, you know, verifying your account. I'm wondering if that might be a way to ensure that folks had gotten an email and then it's on your safe sender list or saved to your favorites. It's not going to go to a spam trash folder because you've accepted that email from, you know, like a staff website or a staff email rather.
Yes, Dr. Byer, that's a known issue that the system generated emails, the address that it's issued from is not at all recognizable and as associated with the Board of Psychologist Examiners or the Committee on Behavior Analysts. It is just that's known. Obviously we're aware of it, but we know that Thentia as a company are aware of it too. What I believe, and I'd have to research this, but what I believe is that the first time that someone has a engagement with the system by submitting an application, that the automatic email, which I described earlier, includes an advisory whitelist or add to your acceptable senders, noreply@thentia.com, which is the email address that no one would assume or recognize or assume that it's associated with us. So if you are, if you were previously a licensee and you didn't apply through this platform, then you're probably getting no reply at Thentia.com when you're reminded to renew your license. So that issue has been raised with Thentia, and they know that it does cause problems, you know, from a customer service perspective. So I haven't heard anything, you know, in terms of, you know, solutions that the company is working on to improve that, that experience. It's a problem.
Okay. But yeah, I'm just wondering if they had to, you know, submit the email and get the code, then we would confirm that they are indeed receiving emails from No Reply at Thentia, right? And they would be instructed to add as a safe sender. So then any future notification auto communications, especially if we were able to move to like a funnel where it's once a month, like, hey, remember, update your stuff. We wouldn't have the, oh my gosh, I had no idea. I went to, it was, you know, thrown out, you know, by my inbox and things like that. Again, I don't know if it's possible or what kind of spend or time cost that would be to implement something like that. But I'm wondering not just for the original application, mm-hmm. but for all future updates or license notifications that come from that email, mm-hmm. then it would be on a safe sender list.
Yeah, but what we can do is we can go into the audit section of the system and verify the system did send an email to this address. Whether we can only do that much, whether it, you know, routed to spam or the recipient said, this is junk, I'm not reading this, or whatever, you know, that's the part that we can't control. So, you know, right. from a delivery aspect, we can verify, oh yes, this, the system reminded you your license, is due for renewal. The system did acknowledge the receipt of your application. There's a few other, I think, verifications that we've gone into the audit section to do, but there's still that one disconnect that
right. I'm just wondering if Thentia sends out an authenticator code, like you couldn't move on in the system till you go and find that email and accept it, and then hopefully at that point, then that email address would be like safe in your system if you've added them to your safe sender list. That was my
right. Right. I'll bring those questions to our the next time we have a meeting with our customer service representative. Thank you. Okay.
Other suggestions or questions or ideas for item 10? Okay. Do we need to make a motion, Ms. Pakanon, or we're good? Okay, coolio. All right, item number 11.
I'm sorry, I was muted. You can just simply direct staff to implement the changes to those templates and direct us to do the further research, which I think that's what you're doing.
Okay, great. All right, thank you, Ms. Pakanon. Number 11, which is new agenda items for future meetings. I know, Dr. Davey, you had one from earlier on that you wanted to add, so I'll pass it to you first.
Thanks. I think I have like three now. But the first one I want to kind of discuss with everybody, and that's around, you know, as we continue to see applications come forward with the behavior analyst or the BCBA title typed in there, you know, to no fault of the licensee or the applicant, right? They are just putting in the job title they've been given by the organization. I'm wondering if we work with our trade association, CASP, and see if they've got some like their Arizona affiliates, if they can get some information out to the organizations, right? It's one thing, I mean, we have the ability to send it out through the BACB with our partnership with them or to our licensees, which I don't think we should shy away from. I think making sure that our licensees are aware that they're the people they supervise should not have that title, I think is important. But I'm thinking, how do we get to the organizations? And the organizations that might be multi-state, multi-site operations, you know, they may not, even if they get the information from one of their BCBAs on the ground or LPAs on the ground, they may not act. But if they're getting it as a ping, perhaps from the trade association, maybe they'll adhere, like pay a little bit more attention to it. And I'm wondering if we could maybe investigate a way of working with Council for Autism Service Providers in particular, and anybody else that we can.
ECO.
Yeah, anybody else we could think of that's trade association that could get kind of a policy update, a policy newsletter blast from us out to the organizations. So I'd like to maybe discuss that with board staff and what their thoughts are and let them think about that one. Because I really think that the Title Act piece of it needs to be pulled out and explained. It's not just about practice. We already, and the other one was the telehealth report part. So I think that was the other one that I wanted to make sure we brought up. So maybe the first one, I think we can break into two. It's like, can we do a title update to all of our licensees and kind of bring everybody up to speed on what should be happening, so we're not running into these hiccups. The second is approaching the trade associations to help us with that as well. So those are my items.
Do we need to make a motion for those three? Or do we? No, I'm good.
No, Madam Chair, staff will place those on a future meeting agenda. You know, when we do this, we have to evaluate certain factors like quorum, you know, how long we have a quorum, what the rest of the agenda looks like. If it's heavy on investigations, we may not be able to bring a matter to an agenda as soon as we would like. But we'll take all this back and we will determine, you know, what we can manage.
And I think finally, like that discussion around employment status. Mm-hmm. Just even thinking back to the discussion with Timothy Pease, right? Like the change of employment changes the ability of what information they may or may not have access to, right? Or what the employer, the current or the past employer, may just proactively provide. And so I do think, you know, a way for that to kind of be part of the process of, like, you know, even if it's like when they're noticed that, like, hey, your application is going to be reviewed this month, like, you need to attest that you are essentially have updated your, you know, that everything is still accurate. And mm-hmm. I think maybe something along those lines would help us get the information we need, or realize that we're going to need to make requests via subpoena to others to be able to adjudicate someone's file. So it could be a supervisor from two employments ago. It could be an employer. It could be any number of things, right? And so I think that perhaps we could maybe discuss some of that, you know, in terms of how we fix that on the electronic application process. Ms. Packenon's already got answers for me.
Ms. Packenon?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Davey, I'm just reacting, and I'm going perilously out on this limb that, you know, we are not to go out on because this isn't on the agenda. It will be in the future. But I think about the recently adopted substantive policy statement, how it really has multiple audiences, right? The target audience would be multiple constituencies. What I think that document does is it is a beautiful job, if they're paying attention, informing supervisors of what they are responsible for, right? And so, you know, I think that that's an education tool that we should not overlook. Anyone who's supervising anybody in the state of Arizona should be familiar with the content of that document. I'll stop. I went too far, but I'll leave it there.
I think that maybe that's part of our outreach, right? I mean, I think that if we can put that back to the future agenda items that I brought up before, of like working with our trade associations as well as our professional associations to maybe to push some of that information out. Very good.
I'll save discussion for it being on the agenda, but I agree with that item to be added. Dr. Stenhoff or Ms. Denton, anything else you would like to add?
No, because
none here.
I'll give us some things to talk about in the future.
Alrighty. Before we move on to number 12, we are at the 2.5 hour mark, and so we should be able to issue half a CEU if Ms. Malice is able to give us another code word.
Yes, Madam Chair. The next code word is roping. Thank you.
All right. Okay. So item number 12 is adjournment. Well,
before we do that, I want to know the rest of the code words, because I want to know what the rest of how the theme was going to play out.
Madam Chair, Dr. Davey, there is the oldest rodeo coming to Prescott next month. So the words were around bareback, barrel, bull riding, steer, that kind of thing.
Love it. All righty.
Keeps everybody coming back for more, Dr. Barrett. Keeps everybody coming back for more.
I really want it to be like a recipe next time. Like, if you don't get to the end, like, can't make the thing, just keep us all in suspense. Okay.
I think Any after event. Doing this for so many years, she's going to have to get increasingly creative about, you know, the theme for each month, because the obvious one, the holidays have been used. So she's she's really stretching for new content. And I applaud that.
And now the committee and the stakeholders, we've all got expectations for these code words.
And the bar is high, yes.
It is high.
True story. True story. All righty. Are we good now? Final offer. Okay. Going, going, gone. Okay. The time is now 12:06 p.m. and I exercise my prerogative as chair to adjourn this meeting. Thanks, everyone.